Hi, guys. Byron here.
Sam, also
no,
here.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to say it. I'm just saying that I was
but
just...
But you looked at me.
Okay, I...
Yeah, you didn't look at me. Why didn't you look at me?
Kelly, I'm just here to let everyone
I'm
know...
I'm not 400 pounds.
Byron, I know. Just tell them.
That you can now purchase t-shirts and pins from us. We've got things for you.
Yay!
Where are these things?
All you need to do is go to shop.frightday.com. We got a cool shirt with a ghost on it, pins and button sets that are a dollar per pin. But don't feel like you have to only pay a dollar for these things. I know that's how much they're valued at.
You could help fund Kelly cryptid expeditions if you were to be really generous.
Show your friends just how scary you are by buying things from us and supporting our obsession with violence.
Not just violence.
Hey, Kelly.
Also plots.
Scary things that aren't violent, like aliens or ghosts or Bigfoot.
If they aren't violent, why are you scared of them?
Because they could be.
Go to shop.frightday.com. Let's start the show. I don't want the frosting.
The frosting's good. Do you ever make frosting just to eat?
No, I put it on top of things because that's what it's for.
Well, it's on top of graham crackers right now, but I'm just saying sometimes I just make a bowl of it and I just eat it. Just frosting. I mean, I eat quinoa too.
Quinoa.
And I also eat kale. I was just recommending a kale Caesar today to somebody.
It's quinoa. What is it?
Quinoa.
What?
It's quinoa.
It's important to know your ancient grains.
This is episode 32. I'm your bro-st, Byron. And tonight, we adjust the tracking, turn back time, and our hats, reviewing Dude Bro Party Massacre 3. But before that, we take a bit of a summer vacation to a loosely defined region in the western North Atlantic Ocean. That's right, we're talking about the Bermuda Triangle in this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies. I'm joined tonight by Kelly.
Hello.
And Sam.
Hey, guys.
Okay, honestly, I find it hard to believe that you don't ever just make frosting. Well, I think everybody does that.
You put it on top of
no,
desserts.
No, no,
sweet
no, no, no.
Treat.
Yeah, and okay, you don't make
no,
it, you open a can.
No, Byron, it's the equivalent of, like, you know how sometimes you just make cookie dough and you just eat the dough?
Absolutely not. It's unsafe. There's raw eggs in there.
Well, the eggs are pasteurized.
Oh, my God, Byron.
I actually don't even know if you can
Byron, your life makes me sad sometimes.
Yeah, my life makes me sad, too.
Byron, you made it sound like you had quite a week.
Oh, I mean... I like to make projects, and those projects kind of got in the way of my horror viewing this week.
You have so many projects.
Well, this is not the sad project podcast. I watched a couple documentaries. One, not horror, but I think Sam might enjoy quite a bit. I actually saw two of them in a three-part series called The Decline of Western Civilization.
Ooh.
Are you familiar with this at all?
No.
It's a documentary series directed by Penelope Spheeris, who you may know as the director of Wayne's World, Little Rascals, and Black Sheep. But before that, she got her start this documentary series where she interviews punk bands in the late 70s and early 80s.
Oh, I have heard of this one.
Yeah, so it takes place in LA and they kind of splice together interviews and live concert footage with bands like Black Flag, Fear, Germs, Circle Jerks.
Those are all Sam's jams right there.
Are those Sam's jams?
Those are Sam's jams.
I wouldn't say they're Sam's jams just because no one should ever say that.
Yeah, it's a bad segment in this week's edition of Sam's Jams. I actually am going to take it back. I'm going to roll that whole clip in reverse, and we're never going to be Sam's Jams again.
No, we're going to hold on to it.
I didn't watch part two, but I did watch part three. Part two was called The Metal Years, and it takes place between 1980 and 1998.
Oh, like DRI and...
I have no idea, actually. I don't know why I skipped The Metal Years, mostly because in part three, they cover gutter punks, which is my least favorite group of punks, I would say. But also, the most compelling, you know?
Who were some of the gutter punk bands that they covered?
Final Conflict, Litmus Green, and Naked Aggression. Do you know those bands?
I am familiar with them.
Okay.
Would Leftover Crack be gutter punk?
See, well, they are, but they're from the...
Post.
And they're also in the Northeast, right?
New York.
Yeah, of these are based in L.A.
What defines gutter punk? Do they live in gutters?
Basically.
They're filthy.
So then it's definitely Leftover Crack.
Super political. No, it's not. You don't know what you're talking about.
They live in a horrible place.
As well as the interviews with the bands, they also interviewed homeless teens living on the street and squatting in buildings. You get to see more what it means to be like a gutter punk, I guess.
What the music meant to those people.
Yeah. It was an interesting series. I learned about this director on Marc Maron's podcast, and it kind of sparked my interest. Who would have thought someone that directed Little Rascals would know so much about the LA punk scene, you know?
Yeah, it's a non sequitur.
I was on a documentary kick, and this just so happened to pop up on my Netflix Instant. This one's for Kelly. It's a documentary called Sirius.
Oh boy, what is it?
IUS. It's a 2013 documentary based on Stephen M. Greer's book, Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge. Do you know who Stephen Greer is?
Yeah, he's the godfather of disclosure.
The man himself.
Yeah.
He's a major advocate for the disclosure of classified information relating to extraterrestrial life and free energy technology. This movie features a mummified supposed alien that is 6 inches tall.
Oh, I know about this.
Familiar with that?
Yeah, I am familiar with that.
Do you know the truth of that?
Well, I've heard different stories. I haven't heard a verified story on any side of it. I would guess it's explainable. But is there an ultimate, like, it's actually been proven now?
You know, I was actually sleeping to this movie, so I didn't figure out the ending. That's why I'm asking you. Is this 6-inch mummified, quote, alien? An alien?
I mean,
is it a cat?
It's obviously not a goddamn cat. I think if I remember correctly, the interesting thing about it was that it actually was really, 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 really old. According to HuffPo, it was 91% human and 9% unidentifiable, the DNA structure.
So it could just be some sort of mutation of a human.
Or contamination of the DNA, rendering it
untestable. Yeah, I mean, some people are saying that it was an aborted fetus. Some people are saying that it was a very abnormally stunted growth child that lived 6 to 8 years.
I thought that was the most interesting part, was that they did have that theory that it potentially lived.
Yeah, and I think that one was winning out because based upon, I don't know, something to do with the mummy, it looked like it actually had existed out of the womb.
Well, it stood upright, not like an infant.
It wasn't like...
Well, it didn't have those legs that go through the side like a baby.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
Is the micro-alien theory, is that something that crops up very often? That aliens are small?
No. I've heard other instances, but that's certainly not a dominant thing.
Obviously, facehuggers are fairly small.
Yeah.
There are some interesting theories that the grays are just a costume and they're actually smaller inside of it. I've heard that before.
Kind of like that Men in Black alien.
Yeah, like the opens it up and there's just a little teeny tiny guy in there. He's like, hi! Yeah.
And the gray suits are just power armor.
Did you actually look at the pictures of this? Yeah. It's pretty creepy looking, huh?
I just thought it was very interesting that it actually existed, you know. It wasn't something that was made for a curiosity shop. This was an actual something that existed, unaltered.
Right. But the thing was, the talk of it died out, which always seems to indicate that there really wasn't anything super fantastic about it. But
yeah, this documentary was in 2013. It was kickstarted.
And supposedly that was the documentary where the DNA tests were revealed.
The part I slept through was the part that was important.
Wow, you don't want to know the truth.
Who needs the truth?
Not this guy.
It featured interviews with a bunch of government people, as well as some of those Great Falls folks we talked about several weeks ago
in Kelly's
Cryptids and Conspiracies. It also featured a bunch of interviews with complete lunatics, you know, crazy people.
Well, and you know,
those are
Stephen,
my absolute favorite.
You know, Stephen Greer is actually a physician. He's a former ER doctor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's not a complete idiot.
I don't think Stephen Greer's an idiot. I think he believes in
this stuff.
He
founded the Disclosure Project, so.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on positive thinking and meditation to call aliens down to Earth?
Okay, so Sam's gonna, yeah. It's really interesting because I believe that positive thoughts and meditation can have quite a profound impact individually. I have yet to see any examples of where it has external influence, although I have a lot of friends who would claim otherwise.
I don't believe you can call down an alien spacecraft, but this movie does have a lot of really cool footage. It's just a great collection of, I think, all of the credible looking YouTube clips.
I love it.
In one place.
Which I love that. I mean, I really, really, truly want there to be something beyond us, whether it's beyond our solar system or beyond our plane of existence. I want there to be something else, but I just don't think there is.
There's no point in arguing with him. There obviously is, but one of these days he'll realize it. In the meantime, there's no point in me wasting my energy arguing with him.
I watched a movie called Bay of Blood.
Okay.
Which is an Italian flick from Mario Bava. I enjoyed it thoroughly for what it was. It's the story of the dark dealings, murders, and trickery surrounding a valuable piece of oceanfront realty in Italy. And it's pretty much just carnage and suspense throughout. Overacted, it's overexposed. The blood is the delightful orange glop.
Ooh, that's my favorite, that 70s blood.
And it's just fun. There's no supernatural element to it, not to give anything away, but it's just a killer movie. And it was very cool. It was very atmospheric. It gave you a very strong sense of place where it was filmed. And I really enjoyed it. I think it may be the first Mario Bava movie that I've watched, but I'm going to be working my way through more of them here after seeing Bay of Blood. I also would like to add an aside that Bay of Blood should not be categorized as a continuation of my earlier quest to watch all of the movies with blood in their title. It's a little bit different league than Blood Lake and Blood Glacier.
You'd stick it above the glacier?
I think so. I really do.
It is about waterfront property, it's better than the lake.
Yes.
That's good to know. Did you know the original title was Twitch of the Death Nerve?
I did, which I actually like a lot better.
I agree.
It has more gravitas to it.
Yeah, and they're saying it's one of the earliest slasher films.
Really?
Yeah, which is pretty great. Yeah, that's all I have to say. It's great. It's a slasher movie.
It might be a little slow for someone accustomed to today's slashers. It was very, very Hitchcockian, I would say. Hitchcock, except with a lot more blood and maybe a lot less subtlety.
Kelly, did you watch anything?
I did, actually. I watched a few things this week. Sam says we're not supposed to talk about Wayward Pines anymore because it's boring.
Sure.
Okay, but I did watch a movie called, oh, I thought Sam was reaching for something, called Dead Silence.
Oh, that's one of the post-Saw James Wan joints.
Yeah, and it was actually quite a bit better than I was anticipating. I'm not going to lie.
It's got an early Ryan Kwanza?
Let's just say Jason from True Blood. Can we just say Jason from True Blood? Yeah.
Mr. Stackhouse.
Yeah. So, and it also had a Donnie Wahlberg in it.
The Australian Stallion.
That's pretty good, too. Donnie Wahlberg.
Oh, yeah. Donnie Wahlberg.
Never saw Dead Silence. I know that it has to do with a puppet.
Yeah, it's ventriloquist. It's creepy ventriloquist dummy. Ever since I saw the episode of Twilight Zone, which I'm sure you haven't seen since you don't watch Twilight Zone, Byron. Great episode on the ventriloquist dummy. And that scared the hell out of me when I was little. So those things, actually, I would say they scare me more than clowns. But then there was a clown doll in this one, too. It was good. The end was meh, but it was much better than I was expecting going in.
Yeah, it's widely known as a bit of a flop following the success of Saw.
I would watch it 10 times before watching Saw.
Yeah.
I find Saw very tiresome.
That's a lie and it's dumb.
Nope. And then I also watched most of, I haven't quite finished it yet, but most of a Julia Stiles joint.
Save the Last Dance.
Out of the Dark.
Oh, that's a heartbreak.
Was that better than Save the Last Dance?
I kind of like Save the Last Dance when I was young, and I haven't watched it since. It was real romantic. When you were a nerdy kid, watching those cool kids made you feel cool.
Come on now.
It was pretty true.
Come on now.
Byron and I watched movies where the nerdy kids just killed people.
Yeah, that was our hobby.
Again, it was kind of interesting. It reminded me of, what was the Guillermo del Toro movie that came out a few years ago about the haunted house, but it was evil fairies? Sam, you know what I'm talking about?
Pan's Labyrinth.
No, it was full-blown American.
Devil's Backbone.
Oh, God. No.
I don't know. I'm
the
sorry.
Orphanage.
No. See, now, hold on. Now I'm going to find it because you're being dumpy.
Are you
being
Pacific Rim? Hey,
you don't have to talk over. Are you excited for The Strain?
I am, because at least if they follow the books, which they've done a pretty incredible job of in the first season, it's going to get grim.
I don't know. We didn't talk about this at all in the early episodes of Fright Day, have we?
I don't think so.
What are your thoughts on the Master's hands?
I don't like the Master's hands or just generally the Master. I don't want to give anything else away.
I don't think it's not a giveaway. He's just got thick hands.
Yeah. It's not even just the hands. Honestly, the makeup for him is really subpar. I think that what they did with him as a, you know, special effects, I thought it was bad.
I don't think the makeup is subpar. I think the makeup is well done. I think the shape that it was used to craft was not well designed.
Don't be afraid of the dark is the name of the movie.
Oh, I don't know anything about that one.
Yeah.
I just think it's a specific style that Guillermo is going for. You know, you don't make that on accident. I've never seen Pan's Labyrinth, so I don't know the limits of his creature capabilities.
They're extensive.
I just feel like he could have done better. But it's coming back on July 15th, I believe.
Yeah, the date sounds right.
I'm excited. I love The Strain. Kelly.
Yes.
This Julia Stiles movie.
Yes.
Overall thoughts.
From what I've seen so far, it's decent.
Okay.
But I would say that Dead Silence is better. But it does remind me of Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. It involves kids, and I'm not sure what the resolution is yet, but I think it's interesting. And I will be finishing it, and then I will be rewatching Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, and then I will be watching for the first time the original Don't Be Afraid of the Dark from 1973, because I've never seen that one.
Great.
And that is all.
That seems like a...
One more thing.
Sure.
We're getting an IMAX theater.
Cool.
What?
Yeah. A legit IMAX theater. I'd break that news to you folk right here.
How did you, of all people, keep that secret from us?
I didn't keep it a secret. Your sister just texted me right now telling me.
Well, you shouldn't have your phone.
It's not. I have messages connected to my computer.
All right. Well, I'm just saying. Cool, but...
No, that's huge. It's a big deal.
I mean, is it though? I'm the kind of guy that doesn't matter if it's projected on a rough sanded wall.
Byron, how many times have you been to an IMAX?
3 times.
And you weren't like flabbergasted?
Quality has never been something that mattered to me when it came to watching a movie. That's why I still buy DVDs over Blu-ray, not just because of the price. Well, because of the price, but because it doesn't matter.
Even with spectacle movies.
I saw 300 in an IMAX. That was kind of cool.
I totally agree with you. Like, It Follows wouldn't have mattered what screen that was on.
Oh, I call bullshit
but
on that.
Jurassic World.
Mm. I think It Follows with all the sound in that, having it surrounding you would have been, oh my God.
Quality is secondary. If the movie's good, it's on quantity. The screen. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, to the amount of movie. Like tonight's film, Dude Bro Party Massacre 3.
Many amounts.
Which we'll get into later. I don't know. I think that's great. I guess if Mad Max was in IMAX, I would have been okay with that. But sorry for not watching horror this week. That's like 3 weeks in a row.
Don't stress about it, Byron.
Life is dark.
You're doing fine.
Yeah, see, there you go. Life is horror.
Kelly?
Yeah. Oh,
I see you're wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
I'm not.
You've got flip-flops on.
I don't.
And there's sand all over this floor.
I wish there was.
Created a home island all for this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Of all the times that it should be Captain Kelly's, it's when we're talking about the goddamn Bermuda Triangle.
Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
I would guess that most of our listeners have heard at some point in their life of the Bermuda Triangle. However, there's some that may not have, and I know we have a wonderful international contingent. For those of you who have not heard of the Bermuda Triangle, it is also known as the Devil's Triangle. And as Byron said, North Atlantic Ocean, the 3 points that define the edges of it are San Juan, Puerto Rico, Miami, Florida, and Bermuda. So it's actually a fairly large area.
Do you think there's a cruise liner that goes between the 3 points just for fun?
Maybe you should make one.
Some sort of spooky cruise?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I don't know that I would actually be on that.
Of course I would.
It just makes the loop until something weird happens.
Yeah... Okay, so the interesting thing is that in the last 100 or so years, there have been more than 100 ship and aircraft disappearances in this area, which is a really high number, you know, for the size of the area, I guess I should say. Some of them are pretty famous. Others are a little bit less well known. Today, I'm just going to run through some of those and then talk about some of the possible explanations. And there's also an interesting theory about what might be happening with the Bermuda Triangle now, because things are definitely changing.
Things are quieting down?
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. The first official reported account of something weird happening in the Bermuda Triangle was in 1881. There was a ship called the Ellen Austin. They were sailing to New York. They came upon what they called a derelict ship, which just means abandoned. So they put a crew aboard to basically caravan.
Always a bad idea.
Well, right. And suddenly, after they put the crew on board, the derelict ship disappeared and then reappeared again with the entire crew gone. They put a second crew on board.
Well, that's just stupid.
I agree. And then it disappeared again.
The ship or the people?
Are they running out of crews?
The ship and the people. And it does not appear that the ship reappeared after the second crew boarded.
Was there rough water at the time? Do you know any details?
No. And keep in mind, it's 1881. 1800s. But according to the reports, the other ship, the Ellen Austin, was fine.
People were super dumb back then, though.
That's true. Yeah.
So moving along, the USS Cyclops was the next really big incident.
That's a sick name.
It's a really good
Isn't
name.
Isn't it a cool name? Yeah. Obviously, U.S. naval ship. And it's the single largest loss of life in the history of the U.S. Navy.
Holy cow.
That wasn't related to combat.
Okay.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. So 309 people on board this ship. Sometime in early March 1918, they departed Barbados, also known as Barbados by those who speak properly. There's no single theory that has really gained much attention, but completely disappeared, crew completely gone, no trace of the ship ever. And then following that, two of Cyclops' sister ships were lost during World War II in the same area.
Younger or older sisters?
I think younger, since they were kicking for a few years longer.
Sure, that makes sense.
I would say younger. We'll get into theories in a little bit, but both of those ships that disappeared were carrying heavy loads of ore. And that was also what was on the Cyclops when the Cyclops disappeared. So there's a lot of metallic ore. And that does tie into some of the theories about what's going on. In fact, some of the not crazy, but rather scientific theories about what's going on. Sam, stop yawning. This is not boring.
It's not boring. It's a physiological response that I can't control. Riveting stuff.
You stop it. The next big incident was the Carol A. Deering, which was a schooner. Sam, you love schooners.
Okay.
Sam, don't you love schooners? You love schooners. Sure. It was a 5-masted schooner, and it was built in 1919.
Everyone knows that.
Of course it was a 5-masted schooner. That's how many mast schooners? I have no idea.
It suddenly appeared in North Carolina. It had run aground in 1921.
Suddenly? What does that mean when it comes to a ship?
6 knots.
It was near Cape Hatteras in North Carolina. I'm not sure how populous that area was in 1919, so I can't tell you that. Or 1921, rather. I can't tell you that. Apparently, there were some rumors surrounding possible piracy, possible running of booze during the Prohibition. There may have been another ship involved, but just mere hours after that ship ran aground, another ship sailed along the same track, ignored all the signals from this ship, and it's speculated that there may have been some foul play involved. So this one does play into the Bermuda Triangle, but has a few more viable explanations.
That's on the outskirts of the triangle, though, right?
Well, so the idea is that it actually had traveled through the triangle and then gotten out of it, and that's when it ran aground.
Hmm.
There was no crew on board. Everybody had disappeared.
Are there any theories about why San Juan, Miami, and Barbados?
To be honest, I think that those lines were drawn like in the 1960s by a guy that first started reporting on the Bermuda Triangle and doing some digging into it. I think he kind of defined it. So I don't know that there's any significant explanation, but the geographical significance we will get into in a minute because there are a couple interesting things.
So wait, what about that plane crash in 2004? I mean, that might be leaping a little bit.
You are. It is leaping a little bit, but I do want to talk about planes. So biggest plane one first, and then we will jump to that. Okay, I promise. So probably the most famous thing that ever happened in the Bermuda Triangle was Flight 19. Anybody who's seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind, at the very beginning, these bomber planes suddenly show up in the middle of, I can't remember if it's the Sahara Desert. It's somewhere in the middle of the desert. Those planes were the planes that disappeared on December 5th, 1945. Five TBM Avenger torpedo bombers. I'm not a war plane aficionado.
Few are.
Right. But
lucky big for us, we've got Sam.
Sam.
Hey, it's Sam's war plane hour.
Sam's weapons authenticity report.
Hey, great. Sam, can you tell us about TBM, Avenger torpedo bombers?
They were basically light bombers, single prop.
He knows things.
I told you. I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
Anti-ship. Light bombers, basically.
Pro-war?
Anti-ship, pro-war.
Yeah.
They hated ships.
Love war.
Love war.
Cool.
Yeah, war.
So five of these planes take off on a training mission, scheduled to take them due east from Fort Lauderdale for 141 miles, north for 73 miles, and then back for 140-mile leg to complete the exercise. So they're actually traveling kind of in a triangle, okay? Never return to base. Disappearance has been attributed to many things, but the Navy says probably navigational error leading to the aircraft running out of fuel. All five of them.
Uh-huh.
Very, very, very strange. So this is one of those cases where some of the others you can write off. I mean, like the last one we talked about, it could have been something with piracy or bootleggers.
But it was so long ago that okay, the ocean's pretty big.
It is pretty big. But here, listen to this. Listen to this.
It's pretty big.
Okay, so they sent out a search and rescue aircraft, a PBM Mariner. Sam, can you tell me what a PBM Mariner looks like?
It's a patrol boat.
What?
It checks things out from above.
Apparently, they had a 13-man crew. They flew out to go try and find these guys. They also disappeared.
It's a flying boat.
Is that really what it is?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's like a big,
well, I mean,
big
aren't all
plane.
Planes a flying boat and all cars
until they sink.
A land boat?
Yeah. And people are corpse boats.
Exactly.
Okay, you guys are really diving off the deep end here.
Apologize. Okay. Continue.
Okay. These things are very, very, very weird. Apparently, the Mariner itself had a troubled history in terms of crashing because it was apparently a flying boat. But the five bombers to just completely disappear and to have zero trace of them anywhere.
Wasn't there a transcript of their last words?
Yeah, so some of the last words, and it actually gets really, really creepy. So Lieutenant Robert Cox was listening to the radio trying to find any trace of any of these individuals. And these are some of the pieces of the transcript from what he had heard and what he tried to communicate with them. He heard one pilot speaking, saying, Powers, what is your compass read? Powers, what is your compass read?
The compass is spinning.
Apparently.
Obviously.
He spoke again. He said, I don't know where we are. We must have got lost after that last turn. Then he continues and he says, this is FT-74, planer boat calling Powers. Please identify yourself so somebody can help you. This is obviously Lieutenant Cox on the ground. The response is,
what is the ground even, man?
The response is negative, not as yet known, and continues to say, Roger, this is MT-28. Both my compasses are out. I am trying to find Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I am over land, but it's broken. I'm sure I'm in the Keys, but I don't know how far down, and I don't know how to get to Fort Lauderdale.
I can't find my keys, man.
I don't think it's like
they're
that.
They're Floridans. They're just hanging out, partying all day.
Bermuda shorts and Hawaiian shirts.
A regular bugle boy.
And then he continues to say, I don't know where I am now. I'm at 2,300 feet. Don't come after me. I mean, even the notion that both of his compasses would go out.
Is that like a pilot version of don't go in there? Like after you go,
I guess,
you go to the bathroom.
Well, no, I don't.
Don't
think it
come
has
after
to do
me, man.
I don't think.
I'll be right back.
Oh, that's pretty good, too. It's like he's a straight up Randy of himself.
And then just a lot of very strange things. The emergency gear wasn't working. None of the compasses were working. Keep in mind, this is communication with one of the five planes. For all of them to disappear, and knowing that this one was apparently over land.
Yeah. What year was this?
1945.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's the biggest incident in the Bermuda Triangle history. That's the one that a lot of people refer to. Flight 19 is a pretty crazy, inexplicable event.
Well, what about Oceanic Flight 815? Are you familiar with this at all?
This is obviously one of the more recent cases, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was in 2004. This plane...
Was it over the Bermuda Triangle?
It actually looks like this one crashed on a tropical island in the South Pacific.
Oh, you're being an asshole. This is lost.
Yeah, this is lost. Yeah.
You're being a dick.
Yeah, Jack Shepard was on board.
Oh, God. I can't believe I just fell for that.
Nah, it's okay.
I'm like looking through my list here. I'm like, no, there's
sure,
one in 2005.
Isn't that the one that ended up disrupting the Dharma Initiative?
Yeah, that was pretty much the downfall of the Dharma Initiative.
Blah, 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 blah.
Sorry to disrupt.
So the most recent disappearance was actually a fashion designer who was headed for Caracas, Venezuela. Apparently, other people on the aircraft with him. His name was Vittorio Missoni.
Okay.
Vittorio Missoni.
Vittorio Missoni.
I shouldn't mock the man's name. He's dead. Now I feel bad.
Well, you mean you don't know he's dead. Okay, you don't know any of these people are dead.
They could all be chilling in Atlantis. Anywhere. True.
Most likely.
The flight completely disappeared after only flying 11 miles. Just completely vanished into thin air. No wreckage found. No bodies recovered. Hundreds of search efforts. Very, very weird. So this sounds a little familiar, right? Like no wreckage recovered.
Are we talking the
Malaysian Air?
Yeah.
370. So really that 2013 incident involving the fashion designer is one of the few things that has been reported since 2008. However, since about 2009, there have been more disappearances reported in the area surrounding the disappearance of Flight 370. So in the South China Sea. There are some people who speculate that this, whatever it might be, has actually shifted locations and is now there.
That happened in Lost.
Maybe it did.
Spoiler alert.
It is actually, spoiler. It's quite interesting because recently, as in a couple of weeks ago.
That actually really did happen in Lost. I'm sorry. That's profound.
Really?
J'Abrams, he knows something.
He probably does. He probably talks to the aliens.
Or he
aliens.
Saw something coming.
He could be just from the future. So there was a tanker, a giant oil tanker that disappeared 3 weeks ago in the exact same area that Flight 370 supposedly was lost. And there have been some other smaller disappearances there, too. So some people are theorizing that there are, as I said, lots and lots of different explanations. Some people believe it does have to do with Atlantis. You mentioned that, Byron.
Yeah, I did.
Other people believe that it has something to do with UFOs, and that was certainly the hypothesis that was presented in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Personally, yeah. I think that they're starting a new civilization, and that's why they needed a fashion designer.
I mean, they need to look good.
Who was the designer of the Nazi uniform?
Oh, I actually, wasn't that like, was it Hilfiger or something?
It wasn't Hilfiger, but it was someone.
It was Hugo Boss.
Yeah, Hugo Boss. Yeah. I'm not saying that the people
Are
living.
Are you comparing aliens to Nazis? Because that's not very nice.
The Dharma Initiative needs new uniforms.
That's what I'm getting at, I guess. Okay. I'm just saying that every new civilization.
So when you say civilization, another word for that could be like Reich?
Sure. God damn it, Sam. Callie, I'm sorry.
But I didn't know you were a Nazi sympathizer.
I'm not a Nazi sympathizer, I promise.
He's a Nazi empathizer.
No.
I'm just going to eat my frosting until you're done talking about the Nazis.
Has there ever been a ship of supplies that has gone missing in the Bermuda Triangle?
Oh, of course.
Maybe they're just grabbing stuff, stockpiling it, and having a blast in New Atlantis.
Could be.
Maybe they're robbers.
A bunch of pirates.
Just thieves.
Kelly, what's your thoughts?
So the supernatural explanations are obviously very interesting to me. The UFO idea that all of them have been abducted. What's most strange to me is the disappearance of multiple ships or multiple planes at once. Even if they're being abducted, where the hell did the planes go? So I guess if UFOs and aliens are involved, they'd have to be taking everything. That seems a little far-fetched to me.
No,
but
they
maybe.
Could have went into the ocean for sure.
The other thing that is kind of interesting to think about is tied a little bit to what we talked about on the Skinwalker Ranch. Maybe there's some weird portal there. Maybe people are flying into that, and that's why they can't be seen. I have seen movies that have given theories about Flight 19, and that's been one where they've flown through a different time zone. And there actually is a report of one wreck that happened, a plane crash where two planes hit each other over the Bermuda Triangle. There was wreckage found, but the wreckage was 160 miles apart from one another, even though they had hit each other, which then again lends itself to this idea of a portal and some weird fold in space-time fabric. So those are kind of the out there explanations. There are thoughts that there's something weird with a magnetic anomaly, and that's why compasses go crazy, and that creates issues for anybody's navigational systems.
And any airplanes get sucked straight down.
I guess the idea is that the reason there haven't been tons in recent years, if you buy into this compass magnetic issue, would be GPS systems have gotten much more efficient, and that's why it's not happening anymore. Okay.
So, but you think that they were having trouble knowing where they were? They were just
right.
getting lost.
They just completely lost. I don't necessarily think that. Uh-huh. Okay. I'm just saying that's one of the theories.
Every theory you say, I'm going to play that opening sound from Lost.
Okay, that's fine.
Cool.
All right. So Gulf Stream obviously is a pretty strong current. People think that might have something to do with it. You know, violent weather, methane coming out of the ocean. There are lots of crazy different theories. To me, the only one outside of my, you know, beloved conspiracy theories that I think sounds reasonable would be the magnetic anomaly with compasses and people getting genuinely lost. But I like to think that it's something more interesting than that.
While I said that the ocean is big, the idea of people getting completely lost and not knowing how to get somewhere.
Like I said, especially when it's in groups. I mean, if it's some jackass on a boat with his wife and they get lost, like, okay, whatever, that could be a million different things. But if you've got five trained pilots who suddenly all become lost, that's a little bit weirder to me. That's a little bit harder to explain away.
Do you believe in the early stories where entire crews were being lost twice?
I believe there certainly are enough instances where ships have shown up completely empty, like the whole crew is gone. I think that that has happened. It may not have happened as many times as it was reported, but I think it definitely has happened. Sam? You're giving me a look.
No, not at
what,
all.
What are your thoughts?
You've been real quiet over there.
One theory heard that made sense to me, and actually I think this was on one of those dumb History Channel shows, was large deposits of subsurface natural gas.
Methane?
Yeah. That's,
what's that doing?
Occasionally released in large quantities. Basically, it's a huge gas bubble that comes up from the ocean floor, and if it hits a ship, the ship loses buoyancy because you can't float in something that's that dense.
What about the planes?
That lack of...
Well, it's the same thing with planes.
Maybe I'm getting this wrong, but that gas goes somewhere when it leaves the ocean up into the sky.
And it just envelops five bomber planes?
No, it just displaces oxygen and they drop rapidly. Yeah, that's what happens. It
destroys
lift.
They
wouldn't still be able to be talking on the radio if that happened. Theory shut
it
down.
It could have...
Bam!
It's natural gas. You know, if you're huffing natural gas for a long time.
They could be Floridans pretty quick.
Yeah.
No.
Floridians?
Floridians?
Or Floridans.
It's Floridians.
Sure.
You guys are wrong. That one's ridiculous.
Nah. I didn't say it was what happened.
It's wrong.
It was a theory that I'd heard.
Captain
somewhere.
Kelly says no.
The same way that that helicopter lost the ability to stay up in the Twilight Zone disaster is
oh,
kind
God,
of the same
don't talk
situation
about that. That's bothered
here.
Me so much since you told me that. I hate that story.
When heat or gases displace the oxygen that someone's flying above, they are going to rapidly drop, just like that helicopter that decapitated two children.
Yeah, let's never, ever bring that up again. I hate it.
I think we should bring it up two or three times an episode.
I hate
absolutely.
It.
So, Kelly, I know this is your segment, but I'd like permission to share a story.
Please share.
This involves shapeshifters, which are kind of, it kind of relates to the Skinwalker Ranch a little bit.
Heck
so
yeah.
I started looking and I found an article titled, "Woman Claimed Shapeshifters Forced Her to Ingest Meth." And I'd like to read the article.
Let's hear it.
I love this.
Feel free to stop me whenever. Casper police arrested an Idaho woman for methamphetamine use after she said shapeshifters forced her to ingest the drug, according to a police report. Lugena Volmar is this woman's name, and she is charged with being under the influence of a controlled substance. She went to a Wyoming medical center shortly after 9 a.m. last Wednesday, asked for her cat to be checked, and she had a large kitchen knife with her, as well as $2,500 in her purse. Hospital staff alerted police. When the police arrived, she told them the story was going to be difficult to believe. And I think that anytime that comes out of a person's mouth, it's probably even more so.
Now, you're probably not going to believe this.
She said she was driving through Casper on her way to Idaho from Denver. And she had been in a Walmart parking lot when several people she didn't know began harassing her. The people were dressed like Chris Angel and were hiding behind trees and under her car, the report states. She accused the people of stealing a shotgun and BB gun from her car and also said they were shapeshifters and turned into trees and other objects. She told police these people went under her car and blew methamphetamine vapor in her car, which caused her to unintentionally ingest meth. She goes on to say that she was diagnosed with methamphetamine-induced delirium and anxiety, and she's in a detention center right now.
Hopefully receiving extreme medical care.
Yeah, also saying they set her up, saying that no one would suspect an old, white, fat woman.
Oh, my God. Doesn't that seem like something that would happen, Casper?
Typical situation. And if you're from Casper, you're the good ones, obviously.
Absolutely. And our heart goes out to you.
So was it Chris Angel shapeshifters?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's my professional opinion. She sounds like a very honest human.
Who?
I'm lying. She looks terrifying.
Yeah. Looks like a monster.
She probably has a really sad backstory for why she got involved in meth. I feel really bad for her.
Oh, that's not that kind of a show.
Yeah, let's not be sad for her.
I am sad. It sucks.
It's super impressive that she came up with that on the spot. I almost wonder if she, like, that was her go-to story.
Chris Angel mind tree.
Yeah.
He turned into a tree, just like he always does.
Duh.
Wasting all the meth.
Man, don't do that to the meth.
Duh. So, shapeshifters, Chris Angels, I don't know. It's up to you, listener. If you think that it was Chris Angels, because there's lots of them, let us know on Twitter, @FrightDay. Kelly, with the gallows coming up and our good friend Charlie finally being exposed.
Damn Charlie.
He's a bit of a ghost, right?
He's a bit of a son of a bitch.
Sure. I mean, I guess if you're thinking
sorry,
about
Charlie.
The challenge. We are still accepting ghost stories for our ghost episode, which may just happen next week.
Hopefully.
So send your ghost stories to kelly@frightday.com.
Please. We have some really good ones, and I think this could be an incredible, incredible, and hopefully repeatable segment that we do with listener real life ghost experiences.
I may just tell a story of my own.
Ooh, I've got one too. You're not going to get one out of Sam because Sam is a curmudgeon. One of these days, Sam will see a ghost and then we'll have him tell the story. But in the meantime, we need your stories. Send any amazing thing that has happened to you related to ghosts, hauntings, demons, and the like.
Are you guys ready for a party?
I am so ready, bro.
Are you ready?
Oh, God, you guys are so annoying.
It's time for us to review Dude Bro Party Massacre 3.
Hope you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
Dude Bro Party Massacre 3 is a 2015 bro-back horror comedy. You see, that's like
so
like
many good puns.
Like throwback.
I got it.
Sure.
Are we going to have to explain everything to Kelly?
Oh,
directed
boy.
By John Salmon, Tom Jacobson, and Michael Rousselet. Written and starring Alec Owen. Sam, would you like to tell us what this movie is all about?
A satirical twist on the gory and sexually charged 1980s slasher genre, Dude Bro Party Massacre 3 is presented as the only surviving VHS copy of the reviled horror franchise's third and final installment. In the wake of two back-to-back mass murders on Chico's frat row, loner God, Brett dude. Chirino must infiltrate the ranks of a popular fraternity to investigate his twin brother's murder at the hands of the serial killer known as Motherface. As they are picked off one by one, Brent and his fellow dude bros must face the terrifying reality that their deadly foe, believed to have been killed twice, has returned from the grave again and is hell-bent on the destruction of the Delta Bys.
Nice.
It's always hard to read that and keep a straight face.
Oh, well, you did a great job. Bravo. This is a bad movie, and its success hinges entirely on the viewer's threshold of good badness. You'll know pretty quickly how much of this you can handle. And for the people who stick around, this is going to be a very enjoyable experience. You really have to commend the directors for committing to the concept. I'm just not exactly sure they should have committed as long as they did, which was an hour and 35 minutes. But nonetheless, Sam, what do you think of this movie?
I got giddy when the credits rolled and it was VHS.
Works every time.
I don't know what it is.
I know VHS is the movie you would think when it comes to VHS movies, but none of them have that square 3x4 format. Did the original VHS?
I don't remember.
I don't think so.
I don't know if you guys saw me over there in my chair, but I kept reaching for the remote and I was going to adjust the tracking.
You're an old person.
I'm an old person.
Absolutely. Kelly, you're so sad over there.
No, the things that I enjoyed about the movie, I think were probably quite a bit different from the things you guys enjoyed. The references to awesome 80s and 90s things, fantastic. I was actually doing some research trying to figure out whether I was getting all of the references because I hate to be hanging out there saying, oh, this was a reference to that. But I'm 99% sure, and this was my favorite one in the whole movie, when they're doing the cleanup routine.
Uh-huh.
The Adventures of Pippi Longstocking was one of my favorite movies as a kid. And there's this hilarious scene where they sing a song that has to do with cleaning everything up. It had to be a reference to that. And that killed me. That was hilarious.
If that's true, that's pretty amazing.
I know it is supposed to be absolutely packed with references. Sure. I'm fairly sure that that was.
To Pippi Longstocking.
Yeah, I really think it was.
Sure.
I really think it was.
The only real references that I caught were two standout shots from the Friday the 13th series. But I'm sure, like you said, there's a million. And you know me, personally, not a huge 80s fan.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts of the movie wasn't even the movie. The commercials.
Oh, God.
The commercials were really good.
So before we go too far, I know you briefly said that this movie was the last remaining copy. It starts out with this big disclaimer saying that...
we should set the stage for that. The film that you're watching here, as introduced in the titles and voiceover at the beginning, is the only remaining copy of Dude Bro Party Massacre 3 because the series was so hated that I guess all copies were destroyed.
Yeah.
One kid stayed up late to record the last airing of it on his VHS player in the 80s. And that's how we were brought the film today.
Yeah, one brave young man. Yeah. I think his forethought was a little misguided to fast forward through the commercials. I really wanted to see those. We got to see about 3 to 4 seconds of every commercial. Pretty amazing stuff.
I don't know. The 3 to 4 second clips I thought made it even more hilarious because they were so nonsensical because of it. Another thing that I thought was great, the really fun cameos in this.
There was a handful.
Patton Oswalt plays a police officer.
The chief.
I guess the chief. Yeah,
the big chief shot. In it.
There's an Andrew W.K. appearance. We all love Andrew W.K.
Ripstick.
Yeah.
Trademark. Ripstick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ripping it and sticking it.
Oh, God.
And Larry King makes an appearance, which I thought was the weirdest one, but really hilarious of it.
Do you want to know why Larry King?
I would love to know why.
He expressed interest after interviewing the producers and makers of this movie.
No kidding.
A little bit of backstory. This is the first production of a company called 5 Second Films. Mm-hmm. And they rose to popularity because I think every weekday since 2007, and I don't know if they're still doing this, I didn't do the research, they would release a 5 second video on YouTube. A lot of them blew up on the internet. Several made it through to Tosh.0 and G4. Lots of these clip shows would air these comedy sketches. And Larry King interviewed them and expressed interest in being killed in one of their features. So this just so happened to be the cameo that he got. And John Francis Daly from Bones and even more importantly, Freaks and Geeks.
Much more importantly.
Got kick flipped over or something for 4 seconds in this movie.
It was an important part.
Absolutely. Not as important as Andrew W.K.'s Ripstick appearance.
Oh my God. I love Andrew W.K. so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. This movie's high points to me personally came in the gore.
Of course they did. You two are so gross.
Yum.
They just did it so well. And it had that bright 80s blood. It's almost water.
Lots of it.
Yo, so much. Mist sprays everywhere. And while I did appreciate all of that, most everything else was a bit overload. And some of it was unnecessary.
I don't know. So I think there are two different ways you can take an homage horror movie. One of them is like what we saw with Cabin in the Woods, which manages to be almost satirical, but still scary at the same time. That's one direction to take. And I thought that that was a really great movie. This one was very clear about its purpose and its path that it wanted to take, which was just utter ridiculousness. You know, I think it very successfully delivered exactly what we should have expected watching the preview. And I kind of like a movie that's that authentic to the expectations that have been created. It was over the top and there were these ridiculous jokes and you're lucky if half of them really hit home for you. But even with that, it makes for a really entertaining. I agree. It maybe an hour and 20 would have been a better length for it. But even an hour and 40, it made for a really entertaining hour and 40 minutes.
I felt like this movie was, rather than a whole cohesive film, was a series of their 5 second films.
Yeah. I don't know how they wrote this. It was like they stacked idea on idea on idea. There wasn't a lot of payoff because they were quick parts. You know?
Not much building to a climax. That being said, the killer in this movie.
And what's the killer's name?
I think we're talking about Motherface.
Yeah.
It was a great name. Such a good name. And actually good creature, I guess not creature, but good gore effects on her face. I thought they did a really good job with
you
that.
You mean the Motherface on Motherface?
Agreed.
It looked good.
And the one-liner quips after the kills were fantastic. And actually could have been in, I think, a lot of the 80s slashers that I love.
Oh, like, very authentic.
Could have been Angela in Sleepaway Camp.
Sleepaway Camp 2, of course. Should we spoil a couple of our favorite kills?
Probably should.
As Sam said, there's not some cohesive plot line that you really need to follow in order to enjoy it. It's not trying to fit itself into a storyline that draws you in. It is a series of funny events that string together. So it's not like we're spoiling something that's going to ruin the impact of the movie for you.
Okay, so let's do dead giveaways real quick. This is the point of the show where we spoil a movie. If you don't want this movie ruined, I highly recommend you pause and watch Dude Bro Party Massacre 3 before continuing. And you can do that, correct, Sam?
You certainly can. It is available right now, streaming at www.dudebropartymassacreiii.com.
There's a scene where one of the characters is definitely an alcoholic.
Beyond social drinking.
Yeah, it's actually...
significantly.
It's alone drinking. It's the opposite of social drinking because this bro is always by himself.
His worst fear is running out of beer.
One night, his worst fear comes true. Staggers outside where he does come face to face with Motherface, who promptly taps his head.
Like it was a keg.
Pumps it up. Serves him a glass of his own...
head juice.
He drinks it and she goes, ugh, it's all head? Is that what she said? The keg's tapped and he falls over.
It's wonderful.
Great scene. If the movie was all gore, I would have been standing up cheering.
But there was a lot of social sketch comedy.
Probably a 4 to 5, nah, that's too long, a 2-minute hazing scene where a pledge gets paddled for way too long.
Yeah.
Funny for 4 seconds. And just keeps on going.
Like the injured knee on Family Guy.
Which I didn't really get. Never mind.
I thought it was hilarious.
But you don't like the pledge paddle.
Honestly, the pledge paddle didn't bother me. I think getting adjusted to the movie took a little bit for me. But once you adjust to what it is, I think it's a fun ride. I understand what you guys are saying. I just think that it's a different approach to this kind of a movie. And I think it was very much in the same vein that they've done their 5-second movies. I think that it was a very cool, unique way to do a horror satire. I also, just for reference, just saw that apparently the fix-up scene, another reviewer is saying, was a reference to Revenge of the Nerds and Die Hard 2.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
As long as we're doing dead giveaways, I think we'd be remiss not to talk about a character with the amazing name Motherface.
Sure, let's dig deeper.
The deeper is, in the first two Dude Bro Party Massacre movies, which we are briefly ushered through at the beginning of this film, we learn that the Dude Bros succeeded in killing the house mother in a prank gone awry.
Kind of like The Burning a little bit.
I'm not familiar with that.
Classic slasher film from the 80s.
Need to see that.
Interesting.
The dead house mother's daughter comes along, and to seek revenge, she takes a scalpel and removes her burned mother's face and wears it like a mask as she seeks retribution on the Dude Bros.
That's not like The Burning, for sure.
That seems like it would be different.
That's a very creative origin story, and I definitely appreciate that. Did anyone else get the vibe of like a manic trauma film?
A manic
very
what?
Very much so. Like a trauma film sped up to 10.
Personally,
good observation.
Not super familiar with the trauma films. It's not my thing.
I mean, we're on the same page, a lot of that. I mean, I saw a lot of them when I was a kid. Not my thing now.
Fans of that kind of over-the-top, and as you said, satirical, low-budget films are going to love this. And it did kind of have a low budget. It was kickstarted, which had 4,789 backers, and they ended up getting $241,071. And apparently an anonymous backer matched all of that, so it was almost $500,000.
And all of the backers did get their names in the credits, which makes for some extremely long credits.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were waiting around for a post-credit sequence. Very brief. It also was preceded by 8 minutes of Kickstarter backers.
Does this movie maybe remind you of another film?
It would be easy to compare this to WNUF Halloween Special, which is...
That's what I was thinking.
The only other example of a format like this, the recorded off of public access channel or local news channel.
Complete with commercials and...
Yeah, but this is way less authentic and also a bit less tasteful than WNUF. It's the mundane meeting with the weirdness that I liked about WNUF, the subtle build and almost like the boring stuff made what happened later better.
The nostalgia of it, aside from the horror, it was just so closely modeled after the commercials and the whole aesthetic, I guess, of local television in the 80s.
But in a way, both of these movies could be put on with low volume at a party and enjoyed almost equally. Maybe Dude Bro Party even more, but WNUF has that built-in atmosphere that this movie is lacking. This is purely entertainment?
Yeah, I would be curious to see the drinking games that Dude Bro Party Massacre 3 spawns.
I'm actually curious to know the number of kills, because the film members were trying to set the goal and break it for most kills in a slasher film. This record was previously held by a movie called The Summer of Massacre that came out in 2012, which is really interesting. Huh. I've never heard of it.
Nor I.
The body count in that movie was 155. I don't know what it was in this movie, but I doubt it was over 155 kills.
Well, unless they're counting all of the pranks gone wrong.
Pranks gone terribly right.
Yes, terribly right, depending on how you look at it.
Thousands of people. Yeah. So many subplots, so many small things that they threw into this. It would be almost impossible to talk about where they're from, the things they do. Every character has a backstory.
It would be a frame-by-frame analysis.
Ketley?
Yes?
I think that this, although it isn't my style of film, it's even less your style of film.
You know, I actually felt that way for at least the first chunk of it. And then once I kind of settled into the absurdity, it actually is pretty close in line. I mean, after all, I do say things like diggity.
Yeah, you do.
You know, this is kind of a movie.
Which is surreal.
Yeah, it's kind of a movie on par with that mentality towards life. It isn't a scary movie, obviously. It's not my top genre of a movie, but I actually ended up finding it pretty darn enjoyable. And I kind of liked the way it even further unraveled at the end, made less and less sense. Any remote storyline that was going just veers off in crazy directions and starts making less and less cohesive sense. I kind of liked that. It made it more fun for me.
As long as we're still in dead giveaways.
Sure are, yeah.
When one of the quasi main characters in one of the side plots turns out to have been a bag of oranges the whole movie.
I don't know what it is that makes me feel so uncomfortable by surreal things like that. It felt like a weird 90s sketch. Something that The State would do. Are you familiar with The State?
I am.
Yeah.
It was like a incredibly tasteless, low value, I mean that in a good way, Final Girls almost as well.
Taking the genre and really playing with it.
Yeah.
Patton Oswalt stepped in.
He certainly did. And he was great as the chief.
Yeah. He loves bad, quote, bad movies. He's known for this joke about a movie called Deathbed, The Bed That Eats. Is anyone familiar with this?
No, never heard of it.
But I should be.
So long ago, a demon fell in love with a woman and conjured up a bed on which to make love with her.
Oh my God.
The woman died during the act, and in grief, the demon wept tears of blood, which fell onto the bed and caused it to come to life. While the demon rests, the bed's evil is contained. But once every 10 years, the demon wakes, giving the bed the power to physically eat human beings. The bed passed from owner to owner until present day. So that's the film that Patton loves. He also loves The Room. Are you familiar with this?
No, if they're bad movies, I probably am not.
Yeah. This is a movie made for horror fans, and especially fans of bad horror.
Cheese, camp, sleaze,
blood.
Boobs.
Yeah, you were going to say boobs too.
I was.
I think that's all we can really say. Great gore scenes that I love.
Yeah, the kills were pretty spectacular.
People getting ripped in half all the time. Corpses coming up out of the bottom of the lake.
Stabbings, dismemberment.
Tongues being ripped out of mouths.
Yep.
I would give this film a 3.8. And if you're tolerant of missed jokes and awkwardness, you're going to have a lot of fun here. It's just not necessarily my cup of horror.
Kelly, what about you?
I know this isn't your cup of horror. It isn't necessarily my cup of horror either. However, I think that it was a unique approach to a horror satire. It's something I haven't seen done before. I thought it was interesting, and I would like to see more from these guys because I think that they are doing some really fun things that are different from what we're seeing in other areas of the genre. For those reasons, I would give it a 5.5.
Wow. And Sam?
I'm going to have to go with a 4.5 on this one. I really liked what they were trying to do, and the parts that I liked, I really liked. I liked the kill scenes. I liked the killer. I loved the commercials. I loved the lo-fi VHS look. But some of the bits and some of the more surreal pieces were a little far afield from even what I would have hoped for this satire comedy horror. So that's where I am.
Great. And that is our review.
Wow.
Of Dude Bro Party Massacre 3. Lots going on at Friday.com.
It's regular party at Friday.com.
Yeah, in fact, I've got a really interesting article that's going to be up by the time this airs for sure about the return of one of my heroes.
Andrew W.K.
Art Bell is back in the game, people.
Wait, really?
The original Coast to Coast AM host is a new show. Read all about it at Friday.com.
And at the same time, you're going to have an opportunity to win a very special item. If you go to FrightNet.com, you can possibly win a Cheap Thrills limited edition Pat Healy's Destroyed Face t-shirt.
It's such a cool shirt.
I have to admit that I kept one for myself.
You did?
I did.
What the heck, man?
I know. I'm not trustworthy.
You too? I'm sorry.
And Byron, come on. You do.
I have one in my closet too.
Yeah. They're so cool.
They are very cool.
But these shirts originally were made to cover the costs of Pat Healy's touring for his amazing movie Cheap Thrills that if you haven't seen, you have to see it. Unfortunately, it's no longer a Netflix instance. You're gonna have to fucking pay some money for it.
Which you should. It's worth it. And put it at the top of your list.
We are gonna pick 4 lucky winners. So all you have to do is go to FrightDay.com or you can just email contest@FrightDay.com with the subject line Cheap Thrills T. Please include your name, shirt size, and your address when you enter.
Can we tell them that if they include a story, we'll give them 2 entries?
No.
I mean, I guess if that's what it takes to get a ghost story out of a folk, they have more chances to win if you talk about a spirit. That's fair, Sam.
Sure.
It's got to be true. It's got to be a real spirit, though.
Well, then we're...
If Kelly's cryptid radar goes off and it turns out that it's bunk, you get -2 entries.
-2 entries? They owe you a Pat Healy
two.
T-shirt? Yes, two of them.
2 t-shirts.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Might as well not even sign up, right?
What a fucking scam.
Oh, well.
But there's also going to be reviews for Late Phases, Body, The Human Centipede 3. I finally wrote that up. All kinds of stuff, as well as trailers and all the latest horror news. FrightDay.com. Check it out daily. Twice daily, even.
Yeah.
If you have time.
And also, you can support this show very easily. If you have money. If you don't have money, it's not as easy.
Oh, it is. You can write us a review if you don't have money.
I completely forgot about the review thing.
Yeah.
That's free.
Yeah.
You can just go to iTunes and click some stars for us. Give us 5 if you think we deserve
Definitely
that.
Definitely 5.
Or nothing.
Or nothing if not. And just write what your thoughts are about our show. And that means the most. If you really have the extra money because you're a secret billionaire who's building a bunker and money means nothing because the world's going to end.
First, tell us where your bunker is.
Please.
Second, buy a shirt.
Go to shop.frightday.com and pick up a shirt or some pins. And there's also the option, if you want to give more, to donate with all of pin purchases. You can also just talk to us on the internet.
We like that.
Kelly, where can people talk to you on the internet?
Oh, gosh, so many places. You can find me, Kelly, at FrightDay.com as an email. And you can find me at KellyFrightDay on Twitter. I love hearing from all of you. You guys are the best. Such wonderful fans we have. We're very lucky.
You like people more if they are haunted.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say I like them more if they're haunted, but I'm definitely interested in hearing the haunted stories. Please do not shy away from sharing your paranormal experiences with Kelly.
How about you, Sam?
Well, Kelly is wrong about most things, but she is not wrong about you guys being awesome. Thanks for listening. You can find me at Sam Frightday on Twitter or sam@frightday.com.
And I'm at Byron McCoy on Twitter. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. Send me an email. Let me know who your favorite serial killer is or something. It'll be fun.
That's a good game.
And until next Friday, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
Stay out of the Bermuda Triangle. Please. Please.